Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
I followed programs from my favorite influencers and never reached the level they are posting on the daily. What am I missing? Is it all drugs and duck eggs? And can I legitimately build muscle with one of your training programs, Power Athlete?
Hey everyone, thanks for tuning into Power Athlete Radio, featuring The Crew, where a former pro football player and a D3 All-Star use strength and conditioning as an excuse to talk about anything but. Now here's John and Tex.
Hey, Power Athlete Nation. Welcome to another episode of Power Athlete Radio. I'm John Walborn, CEO of Power Athlete, and also 10-year NFL athlete. And I am joined today by Mr. McQuilkin, a.k.a. Tex, Director of Training. Good to see you.
Howdy.
Nice. Well, we have a special one for you today. We have pulled some questions from the hotline. We have this little thing called the Power Athlete Hotline, where we ask you, the listener, and all the people that are following training programs, social media, whatnot, to call in and leave us questions. And we get a ton. So if you're interested in leaving us a question, or you want to converse or put something out there, real, real easy to get a hold up on the hotline, 929-464-464-0. 929-ing-ing-0. Cool. So
today's a very special one because they use very colorful language.
This one I've had sitting in my inbox for a little bit. And when some of these hit, this actually came to info. When certain ones that are written like this come, I usually respond because I can tell that the person is a little frustrated and they do have a good sense of humor and they kind of understand, or maybe they don't, that, you know, maybe what they see on social media or they're seeing in the world isn't really a reality. But you want to jump right in and read away?
Here we go. Power Athlete Radio. Help me. I am lost and confused. I followed a dozen different programs over the last 5 years and nothing has resulted in my goal to be thick, jacked, and juicy as fuck, to quote the influencers that I follow on IG. I followed programs from my favorite influencers and never reached the level they are posting on the daily. What am I missing? Is it all drugs and duck eggs? And can I legitimately build muscle with one of your training programs, Power Athlete?
So, lot to unpack, to quote our good friend Rob Wolf. The first thing I read into it, a dozen different programs over 5 years. Now, we'll give a little caveat and say, I hope you don't believe everything you see on TV or the internet. And I'll just give you a little antidote. The other day in the comments, a guy commented on one of the pictures I posted a year or two ago. And it was of that 67C10 that I was involved in with the Joe Martin show, Iron Resurrection. There's a show on Velocity called Iron Resurrection that I was in. There was a guy who wanted a custom 67 C10 built. He was either going through a lawsuit or divorce or didn't want to see his face on there. So they asked me to be the stand-in since I'm Joe's neighbor and know a lot of guys at the shop. So I agreed, and I was the stand-in. He got the car, had it a short period of time, and then brought it to Barrett Jackson and sold it, and ended up losing some coin on it. Guy asked, hey, you know, this is your car. What happened? Why'd you sell it? So my comment to him was like, do you believe everything you see on the internet? Do you believe what you saw on that TV show? I was just a stand-in. I was the talent. That wasn't my car. And the guy was pretty bummed believing that that was my car. Now, would I have been stoked to have it? Of course, but that's not the reality. And I think sometimes what we see on TV or we see on social media isn't necessarily the reality of what really happens. Now, not to say that these programs and the guys that you're following don't write good programs, but it'd be kind of hard to wrap my head around that if you followed a dozen of these different programs from different influencers over 5 years and haven't resulted in getting the gains, it could be a fact that maybe you don't understand the training aspect. Hypertrophy, and if you want to break down the science a little bit, I pulled some of Brad's Schoenfeld's research. If you look him up, he's excellent on social media in terms of posting a ton of research working in a lab. But there was an interesting quote that muscle hypertrophy can attain through a wide range of resistance training programs. The principle of specificity. Did I fuck that one up? Say it for me.
Specificity.
Dictates that some routines will promote greater hypertrophy than others. Now, what are the factors? What are necessarily the different pieces of hypertrophy that go into this? So if you look at it, certain training programs do elicit a greater response than others. So why is that? It can be a number of factors. It could be exercise selection. It could be volume. It could be intensity. It could be hormonal. So where we pretty much start with is, does the program adhere to a certain set of principles?
Yeah. Yeah. And this leads to, and we got to differentiate the two, the said principle and then specificity. So said principle, for those of you unaware, stands for specific adaptation to imposed demands. Now the imposed demands, that would be the sets, the reps, the exercise arrangement, essentially the programs that we offer on Train Heroic. And then the specific adaptations, that's the mind of John Wellborn. That's what he is targeting with the arrangement that he puts out there. So that is programming. It's the specific adaptation to imposed demands.
Yeah, it's the nuts and the bolts.
Excellent. So now to level up, and this is why I'll put our programs above anyone else's, is specificity. So within that, that is the specific setup and execution of the program, of the movements. Now, how we put you in the best position to execute the movements as it's intended in John's head, videos, coaching notes in there, and then feedback to help shape your movement if you post videos on the training feeds, aiming to put you in the best position to execute it as we intend. And also, there's amazing Masters of Movement videos.
Yeah, we just filmed a bunch of them today.
That we film and put out there. Again, so it's common exercises out there, but we dial it in. So they're executed to accomplish the specific adaptation that we're looking for.
So let's cover some bases on just some of the like simpler wins, the low hanging fruit. Mm-hmm. Number one, you know, we don't know anything about the individual in terms of training history. We don't know what he's doing for his diet, right? Is he eating a high protein diet? Is he eating enough calories? Because to put on muscle and put on size, you're going to have to be in a caloric surplus. Does he even weigh and measure his food? Does he know how much he's eating? And more importantly, how much protein is he consuming? You know, muscle, amino acids, the building blocks, you have to be able to consume them. Sleep is another major factor. And also we can look at hormones. No hormone panels. We don't know what his growth hormone looks like. Testosterone, IGF-1, all of those become key factors in being able to put on muscle. And then we move over to specificity.
That's right.
I finally got it. We can start talking about mechanical tension.
Yes.
And mechanical tension is produced by force generated. And this is essential in terms of muscle growth and the combination of the stimuli really allows. And I think when people get confused on this like idea of muscle tension, it only happens at a certain point when you're working towards failure. A lot of times the idea of leaving a rep or two in the tank ends up being the difference between being able to put on the size of the muscle that you need. I remember a long time ago, somebody made an interesting point to me that that the best way to put on muscle is through difficult movements done in amounts close to failure with a high degree of tension and intent. And I think that's another issue. When you go in, what's your intent? Are you driving past the intent, or are you bailing too early?
Yeah. This goes back to a number of podcasts that we've executed, external cues versus internal cues. And with bodybuilding and muscle growth, that intent, that internal direction that you have and focusing on the mind-muscle connection does go a long way for building muscle. Now, if we're working with basketball players, reactive sports, then we'd be more talking about the execution specificity of external cues, as like simple as jump, push, power, go. So one word directions, but then the internal cues and direction, you're focusing on building the tension and feeling it, it boil, it bubble up and get to that point of failure that John's speaking of.
There's also another point for muscle damage. And this, I think, comes from, you know, a long time, and we've seen within the CrossFit idea, you know, within CrossFit training, that extensive muscle damage results in hypertrophy. The research is a little hazy on that one, where, you know, training can result in localized damage to muscle tissue, and under certain conditions could result in putting on hypertrophy. I really think what happens is, as you train mechanical tension, muscle damage ends up causing protein synthesis. And even though it's not the driver, which I believe mechanical tension is, it plays a factor in terms of being able to create new muscle.
Yeah, and we can't say and point a finger to say, no, it doesn't. Hypertrophy does not happen.
Well, because nothing exists in a vacuum, and everything is played upon. It's like, what's the weak chain? Is it could we get blood work and find that this individual has a 10 of, or, you know, moderate amount, let's say, of total testosterone, very low amount of free testosterone, and sex binding globulin hormone is through the roof, you know, which is produced in the liver and gobbles up free testosterone. And that could be a key factor.
And their pain tolerance, because we're saying build up the tension and go to failure. Well, that's a little bit different for your pain tolerance and then the average Joe out there.
And then also the movement selection. Like, it's a lot easier to go to failure when you're using dumbbells and some machines than it is with some barbells. Like, I mean, I've squatted to failure on numerous occasions, and getting out of the bottom of that final rep has always been like, holy shit, am I going to die on this one?
Yeah, versus you on the leg press.
Yeah, versus me on a leg press, where all of a sudden I'm going to failure. I'm like, oh, fuck.
Bored.
Yeah, there's no chance I'm going to die on this one today. So metabolic stress is definitely a key factor. The idea that there's an accumulation of high force development to optimize, you know, training is another one. Volume versus intensity.
Yeah, now we're back to the programming versus the execution.
Yeah, so the volume versus intensity is another key factor. There was another bit of research that talked about, let me pull it up, resistance training volume enhances muscle hypertrophy, but not strength in trained men. They looked at three different groups, low volume, moderate volume, and high volume. And the strength numbers were kind of universal across the group, but definitely the group that had the higher amount of volume tended to put on more muscle, just because you have more opportunity to put the body through different ranges of motion.
Yeah. And for our listeners that are not familiar, John, quick examples of volume versus intensity. How do we find intensity? Is it this emotional stress, feelings at the end of Fran?
Intensity is defined as a percentage of 1 RM. So if I bench, 100 pounds, let's say, and I go in and I try to lift 90 pounds for 10 sets of 10, you know, that's a pretty high intensity for a ton of volume.
You mean 100 pound dumbbells, right?
Yeah. There's actually an inverse relationship between volume and intensity. The lower the intensity, the higher the volume. The higher the intensity, the lower the volume.
So what's a weight range that we can target more volume that still leads us to failure versus just doing it until we're bored?
It's going to differ for every person. And I really think that there's an accumulation phase for volume. So, I mean, let's say you start out and you're doing three sets of somewhere between 6 to 12 reps at, I don't know, anywhere from 70 to 75% of intensity. And if, let's say, you handle that and you're recovering, you're able to push the loads. Now, what's interesting, and the reason I give a rep range, is that the number has to be, or the intensity has to be matched to the number of reps. So, for example, if I go in, I'm like, okay, I'm gonna lift 75% for six reps and those go up six easy and I can probably get, you know, half a dozen more. Do I need to push it? Of course. You know, the idea is that the final rep should be like, I don't know if I'm gonna get this, and somehow, okay, I got it. That to me is pushing the intensity or pushing the mechanical tension and pushing towards mechanical failure. You know, with dumbbells and leg press and other movements, like let's say Bulgarian split squats, where, you know, the loading's a little bit different, you can push to the point of like, I cannot get another rep, drop the weights, like on a Bulgarian split squat, and try to get some more body weight movements, which we do. But I think this is where machines come into play, where now I can create a safer environment with stability to potentially build muscle in a, you know, environment where I'm trying to go to failure.
If your goal is getting thick and juicy AF.
Yeah.
So if we're working with our athletes, our field sport, teenagers, college kids, you know, post-college players, we want that balance to be a factor.
Well, the interesting thing,
for the most part.
Well, no, never. I mean, I had a talk to me, Johnny, years ago, where a guy was trying to tell me if leg press was the best way to build strength for the legs for sport. And I disagreed with him. Because when you put a bar in your back,
was he a high school football coach?
No, I don't know what. No, I think he made leg presses because he wanted to send me his leg press. But the balance aspect of being able to put a heavy bar in your back and you know, and go down below parallel and stand up with good technique, you know, that you know, physical perspicuity, the ability to execute that. I mean, the way that you move through planes of motion, you know, that balance aspect becomes a key factor for strength and also for developing athleticism. You know, if you get into a situation where you sit in a leg press and all you have to do is push, there's a direct relationship between hypertrophy and stability. So when I can stabilize the muscle using a pad or a seat or something within a machine, and all I have to do is push, there is a greater chance of hypertrophy, but you're not necessarily developing the body the same way as you are with free weights.
Yeah, we're bypassing or foregoing the coordination development that's necessary.
Yeah.
And yeah, you won't find machines on our bedrock program, our developmental program for athletes, but they can find a place on a specific program like Jack Street.
You know, years ago when we were training at Metrics, I think I've told the story. I know you know it. You might even have been there. We went in and we watched a pretty young 13, 14 year old girl who was bench pressing, you know, young volleyball player in there with her trainer. And as he laid down to bench press, all of a sudden she's like going everywhere and I'm seeing it. I'm like, oh my God, inter and intramuscular coordination happening in real time. And what did he do? Oh, this looks terrible. Racks the weight and takes her over and put her on a Smith machine. Right now, all of a sudden the machine is developing the coordination and we're actually bypassing one of the elements of strength. So I really think that there's a hierarchy in this thing. I think for all young athletes, and that's why we put it on the bedrock program and really in just that kind of maturation phase, free weights are so critical in terms of developing the strength, the hypertrophy, and really just the engine you need to be successful. As you get a little bit older and you get more training volume underneath and more experience, all of a sudden now we can kind of start subbing in machines and being a little bit more focused on hypertrophy.
And you're also prepared for compensatory acceleration and that intent, that speed of movement that also plays a factor in hypertrophy.
Yeah. Another factor outside of volume and intensity is rest periods. This is really pretty fascinating because the research is all over the place. You know, you know, some people say 60 to 90 seconds. I've seen as much as 2 to 3. And then I've seen people say rest as long as you need to recover so that each effort you give is 100%. So that if I got to rest 5 minutes to try to get 10 reps and can't get 11 at a heavier weight, that the intensity factor and your ability to accumulate volume under that load is the driving factor, regardless of rest. That's an interesting one, because if you look at like the Mike Metzner and also the Dorian Yates one set to failure, there was so much work in the bottom side of that working up to that one final set. It's extremely misleading. People were like, man, Dorian Yates only did, you know, 3 or 4 sets in a workout. How did it take him so long? Well, the dude had 6 or 7, 8 sets working up to that final max rep set. And, you know, the reason that we incorporate so many rep maxes into the training is for this exact reason. I'm expecting people to take between 4 or 7 workup sets till they get to one final rep max type of set. The rest sets for me, I try to keep my rest down to, you know, right around 2 to 3 minutes. That's why I try to put my phone as way away from me as possible. I plug it in over by where the TV, and if I'm working on this side, just because I don't want that thing anywhere near me. If I know if, you know, I'm following Train Heroic, I tend to write it out on a piece of paper. So I have the paper in my pocket and I'm not constantly looking at my phone, because I found that when I have the phone, I'm easily distracted.
Yeah, that's how I buy rest time. I put it as far away from me as I can and walk over.
So rest intervals. And then the other one is time under tension. So there's a ton of research on this. I mean, Charles Polkman was a huge proponent of time under tension. For me personally, so I'm over between a controlled eccentric movement of, let's say, anywhere from 2 to 4 seconds. So controlled eccentric. And then what I want is I want an extremely violent, fast accentuation phase, which is the transition between eccentric and concentric. And then I want to use compensatory acceleration on the concentric movement, which means that I'm trying to move the bar from point A to point B as violently, as fast as possible. I've never been a huge fan of time concentric movements.
Yeah.
We always want to move them with max speed. And the research supports that controlled eccentrics, smooth accentuation phase, violent concentric. Now, you can start throwing some time movements in at the bottom.
That would be targeted muscle contraction. So what you just explained there, that's your expectation of execution of all movements unless said otherwise.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when we get into targeted muscle contractions for an isometric or an eccentric, you will provide the time in the program that your expectation is. The beauty, though, whether it's a targeted eccentric movement or a targeted isometric, the concentric is always as fast as possible.
Yes.
And you do not provide that time to tempo on the way up.
Yeah. So if you're going to do some form of dead stop, or you want to put like a time at the bottom, you know, like let's say the eccentric,
well, not
3 second, but when you start doing pause type movements, or you're resting at the bottom or pausing, what you're trying to do is take the stretch shortening cycle out.
Yeah.
What I really like is that is really working up on that smooth accentuation phase and being able to transition between the two. So I don't get overly wrapped around the axle on barbell lifts or big heavy movers. But when we were filming for the lateral dumbbell and cable raises today, what did we do? We paused at the bottom, you bring it up and then come down, because we were looking for, you know, to take the swinging motion out that most people intended to use.
And that was not a relaxed pause at the bottom. It was a intentionally stop the momentum and redirect.
Well, I mean, even for, let's say I'll just use the bench press, right? You bring the bar down. And let's say you have a, you know, 2 count pause on your chest. I'm not relaxing. I'm still maintaining that isometric contraction. I allow like triphasic, bring it down and then driving it up. Whereas I think a lot of times people think about resting at the bottom and there is no rest. You're still maintaining max tension.
And what John's sharing here, this is the value of specificity and having a switched on coach who knows what can go wrong and then giving you targeted directions to apply to have success. So even though we're writing, let's just call it 3 sets of 5 bench press, John will tell you how he wants it executed to accomplish the intent.
And we're real fortunate, especially when people provide video. I mean, I get tagged in a ton of stuff on social media and I get a chance to glimpse in and see the way people are training. You know, just we'll use the bench press. We did a master's movement on bench press today because I see a lot of people bringing it down and a ton of elbow flare. You know, ideally you want to bring the bar down, keep the elbows kind of tighter, the rib cage, elbows at a 45, and then bring the weight and drive it back. A lot of people I saw coming real wide and the elbow coming out and not keeping it tucked. I mean, just a classic flaw that can be easily fixed to help drive the bench press. We had another guy had, you know, my bench press hasn't gone up in 3 years. Post one video and I'm like, I can tell you why it hasn't gone up, because your technique is awful.
Well, this is why we do the Masters of Movement, because there's this assumption that everyone knows, oh, dude, I played football in high school. I know what a bench press. No, it gets you dialed in for our intention, because we don't want to just increase the weight on your bench press. We want your bench press to then carry over to your pull-ups, to everything else, to everything you're doing. So then we create this more complete athlete when we're, yeah, sure, your bench will go up.
Well, on the said side, exercise selection is extremely important. So the movement should be varied, multi-planar, you know, multi-angled. You know, all to elicit and stimulate different muscle fibers. So this is where it tends to help, you know, talking with people and even asking like, hey, you just did that movement like when we were doing the seated dumbbell press. After I correct the way you did it first, and then I corrected you and said, hey, try it out like this.
Yeah, I was doing it wrong on purpose so you could get the coaching on film.
No, dude, the first, it was bad. And I know, but you did a classic. That's why I said you did the classic NSAM seated dumbbell press. And that isn't the way we do it. And, but then all of a sudden when I got you into the right position, because one of, I mean, has anybody ever coached you on the seated dumbbell press? No. Zangus, that was one of our primary shoulder exercises, and coached the shit out of us on that movement. The idea of, I want you to clean them up, you know, let your butt hit the pad and drive back. So you're actually pinning your butt in that corner, you know, good, nice and erect, and then bringing the weight up and then driving it. And once you did it, you felt a dramatic difference through the whole body and the shoulders.
Power.
Yeah. And it looked dramatically better. So sometimes exercise selection, unless you have somebody coaching you that knows what the fuck they're doing, sometimes exercise selection is important. And, you know, all too often, you know, I've heard people be like, oh, I didn't feel anything. I wasn't getting any benefit out of it. This movement didn't help me. And it all comes down to really the execution, and more importantly, being able to coach through the movement.
And shameless plug for Field Strong. We understand the complexity of those movements. So then do a little pre-programming mm-hmm. to put you in a position to succeed. So essentially break apart the compound movement that we have into different pieces for our prep work.
It's called patterning.
And then put you in the best position to succeed.
Another key factor is hypertrophy training should have some form of like accumulation phase. Like you're accumulating working in. And if you look at all of Jack Street and all the kind of the hypertrophy programs we have, there's always a ramp up of, of intensity and volume. You know, we start easy and it's like climbing a hill. We climb a hill and then we go down and we climb it again. And then it's usually followed by some form of, taper that allows for supercompensation.
Yeah. This is said principle all day. Excellent. And if look back on the programs that you were trying for the past 5 years, dude, and see if you can see these things or where they miss the mark that we're explaining here.
I think, and you know, we're just spitballing based on the question, but I really believe that, the 12 or whatever it is, Instagram influences that you followed are pretty well stacked. I mean, he mentioned duck eggs, so he's making a reference to Mike O'Hearn, who I'm not a big duck egg guy, but I am a big ostrich egg guy.
I thought you were talking about the Breeze, who's
the Breeze,
running horse since he was 13.
Well, and eating duck eggs.
Fertilized
duck eggs. There was a whole deal where Mike O'Hearn was selling duck eggs as like the secret to putting on muscle. You know, the only problem is they were like $40 an egg, I think, is the way he was selling them. So they're pretty.
You mean his duck egg farm?
Yeah. I think he was growing them in his house with his ducks. But if you've ever had access to an ostrich egg, they're pretty expensive. I think an ostrich egg cost me $40. Now, mind you, it made the biggest omelet I've ever seen. Like I cooked the omelet for like myself and three kids. But the yolk was pretty amazing. Side note, the individuals that he's following are probably in phenomenal shape, know what they're doing. Or the fact that you selected the wrong program, because a lot of times people are writing the program that they're doing and they're not necessarily writing it for them 5, 10, 15, 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So the one good thing that we've done with Bedrock and the different programs, there's a maturation phase. This is where you start and this is where we taper into. And I think if you can follow that and start really maximizing your intent and the way that you're executing the movements, I'm much more interested in perfection of movement. And, you know, at the end of the day, if you're trying to put on muscle, do stronger people put on muscle more easily? I mean, I would say yes, a larger cross-sectional size of muscle should theoretically be able to support more weight. But really what it comes down to, if you've watched any high-level bodybuilders, there's extreme dedication and detail in how they train. The reps aren't sloppy. You know, and they're very, very detailed in how that executes. So maybe it takes a time, or maybe hiring a coach, or more importantly, making, you know, shooting some videos and seeing like, am I really doing what I think I'm doing?
Yeah. To sum it all up, it's the program you follow, how you move, and then as we let off with protein consumption.
Yeah. I mean, like we said, the low hanging fruit, what are you doing for sleep? What are you doing for diet? If you're really nervous about it, you might go to the doc and get some hormone checks, see that, you know, hormonally everything's firing, and then from there, you can start dialing in the specifics. Are you spending too long in the gym? I mean, I know that was a big Stan Efforting deal. you know, quick hitting gym. I would rather go to the, you know, the gym three times for 45 minutes and spend 3 hours in the gym. You know, so sometimes I think if you spend too long in the gym, intensity starts to fall off and then you just start trying to stack on volume. And I think that we talked about that there is a relationship to hypertrophy with just stacking on more volume, but it's not a Christmas tree. You know, like first time you get a Christmas tree, you put a couple ornaments, 10 years later, there's ornaments everywhere. And what I need you to do is try to simplify and make sure that you're keeping a high level of intensity and intent through the entire training deal. So when I design stuff, I try to get people in, you know, if I can get you done in 50 to 70 minutes, that's ideal. If you're spending 2 to 3 hours following a program, I need you to go faster.
I got one final question for you, John. This is for our listener. The ratio between exercise filmed and exercise executed in a workout.
What do you mean?
Well, let's say I'm in there for an hour, 60 minutes of training. I mean, how much of that am I allowed to film and put on the line? Three sets?
I think you should only post one set, one movement a day. So if you go in and you film everything, I think you need to post your top set. Like, let's see how you move.
What about a superset?
Well, even a superset, but I think you should film at least a few of your warm-up sets and then go back and in, you know, in the 60, 90 seconds, review them. I know that's extremely valuable for me because sometimes what I think is happening isn't what's truly happening. And, you know, you're doing your training, other people are doing their training. So, I mean, on occasion, I'll be like, hey, watch this. And it happened the other day when we were doing safety bar squats. I'm like, fuck, man, something ain't right. And you were like, dude, it looks like shit. You're doing this and this. And then the next one, I came back.
I didn't say shit. It was more complimentary of how bad it looked, but go.
You were like, oh my God, that's awful. But then when I put more weight on, which is what I do when it looks bad, I just keep adding weight until it looks good. I added more weight and all of a sudden
it's not recommended for everyone.
Yeah, no, that's just me. But it ended up, you're like, holy shit, you fixed everything. Well, yeah, because sometimes it's nice to just be reminded like, hey, I want you to focus on this and I need you to move through this. And, you know, I think one of the secret hacks, and even though I hate the term hack for putting on hypertrophy, is having a training partner that isn't fucking around on his phone, somebody that's engaged in the training, you know, and, you know, helping you stay on task and you vice versa. And if you need some help or you need a little bit of motivations there to pump you up and get you ready. So I definitely think having a training partner, I've trained by myself for years and I really enjoy having a training partner and somebody who's in the fight with you. It's kind of like my wife, you know, I mean, not that a training partner, so it could be like a marriage, but like, you know, one of the secrets of relationship is like, it's us against them. It's us against the world. We're in this, we're a team. And as you have a family, the same thing, or even like your team. But I think having a training partner is extremely valuable, but only if that training partner is switched on and wants you to be better. Isn't just there because I don't want to be lonely or
To film you, influencer in the wild.
That's why you got to get magnets. I mean, doesn't Paul Carter, you know, walk around with like a tripod and sets that deal up and does all his video? So, I mean, he doesn't have a training partner and he just tripods everything. Then you put magnets on shit. But I really think the function of the training partner is not to film you. It's not. Like, I would take the phone and either set it up, like put it on a rack, put it on a tripod, do whatever. The idea of the training partner is to help you through the set, to coach you and to give you feedback in real time. If all he's doing is filming, he's looking at it through and he's not coaching you. So I think that if you're going to have a training partner, don't let him film, you know, set up a tripod, put some magnets on it, you know, get it out. And then, you know, that way you're in the moment and he can coach you. And also finding somebody or being, you know, forthright enough to be like, hey, dude, this is what I'm trying to do. This is what I want it to look like. And I need you to help me to get there.
Oh, so we got to add that to the point. Get a training partner.
If you have the ability to, or, you know, if you don't
post
have access,
your lifts to our feeds.
Yeah. And we'll be your virtual training partner. So at the end of the day, there's some real easy low hanging fruit for putting on hypertrophy, but I don't believe it's the fault of all of Instagram influencers. And it's not their responsibility to somehow gift you muscle. Muscle is extremely expensive. So you're going to have to fight for every ounce of it. So we're going to need you to dial in your training. We're going to think about perfection of movement, and you're going to have to start fighting for that mechanical tension and start pushing yourself harder than thought that was ever possible.
Yeah. And if you can't push yourself hard enough to what it takes to build muscle, find somebody who will.
Yeah, somebody will help. So, all right. And if you need help with a training program, you know where to find us, Power Athlete HQ, /training. Scroll down. We still have a 7-day free trial. We can go through and try the programs. Maybe we might have those in the future. Maybe we won't. We have the option now, but we still offer free trials. So get in there, do the training, hit us up on the feed, reach out. We got a hotline. We got info. We got a million ways to contact us on social media. If you got questions, we got answers. Click on Power Athlete HQ. See you.
Now it's time for you to empower your performance. Head to powerathletehq.com/training to choose from a number of programs to meet your specific performance goals. And if you like to break a mental sweat too, visit academy.powerathletehq.com and become a real stakeholder in you or your athlete's success. Until next time, bye!
Ohio football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown, and he throws an awesome block so his teammate can score instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you another chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scorer scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. Everyone knows the most exciting part of football is the score. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you have a chance to keep the fun going even after the first player crosses the goal line. Plus, you can enjoy second chance all season long. Place a first TD scorer wager today. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.